are going to do this until we fix this, you know. And I don't know it's going to be a complete fix, but God bless. It's got to do better than we're doing right now, you know.
Yeah. Department of Health and Social Services just announced that last month, 39 people statewide passed away from overdoses, and that's the highest month since they've been keeping track. They started in 2013. You've talked about some of the boots on the ground stuff. Your other role on the Behavioral Health Consortium is to try to connect people with treatment. With the passage of some laws, like the governor just signed the overdose system of care bill, what is that going to open up and allow for the state to do in regards to connecting people who have overdosed with treatment right away?
Yeah, so there's several pieces to that. One is information sharing so that we can finally get a wraparound service as to, like, how do we find these folks? How do we get to these folks? So it's enabling – some of that was an enabling legislation to data share and to get to those folks so that we can really do the kind of work we need to do to study this disease. Not that we don't know what it is. It's, you know, it's not a hard thing to figure out in some aspects. In other aspects, it is hard to figure out. But that legislation is you know, kind of opening up the ability for us to connect the dots to folks that have overdosed and try to trace them down and track them down and get help. The other pieces of this, and there's a lot of legislation and more to come, you know, stay tuned because we're not done yet with some of the things we need to do to make this happen. And I'm not afraid to say that I will be down there and working on this so that we can get people the help they need. But the overdose board, or I should say the system of care approach, is something that we use in the state for trauma. We use it for stroke and pediatrics. I happen to sit on all three committees. And in talking with the lieutenant governor and others, you know, it seemed to make sense. Like, why not get this going from one side of the state to the other and get all the right people at the table and collectively decide how we're going to do this? I mean, there's some folks out there, I'm not even going to lie, that are doing terrific work. They're doing fantastic things. And we've discovered that on our trips out. So I think bringing that all together and bringing everyone to the table and saying, hey, you know, so-and-so is doing this, 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 but let's do it collectively. So every ER has a game plan. You know, every transitional housing has a game plan. I spoke yesterday, I guess it was the day before, talking about, like, if you had a heart attack or stroke, everybody would know, from the EMS to the paramedics to the ER doc to the hospitalist taking care of you in the hospital, everybody would know what you should be getting, what you should do, how you should be treated. And we already know the path you're going to take. We study it. We know it. We QA it. But we don't have that for a disease that's killing more people in our state right now than either one of those things.
So what pieces need to be put into place at specifically at ERs and other places like schools and prisons?
I mean, I could break it down step by step by step, and oh my gosh, it's daunting. But even how EMS treats folks, you know, where do they go? Do they get Narcan and go to the ER? Or do they get Narcan and go to treatment? Someplace which is a giddied up treatment center with a lot of resources, more than we have right now, to start them on their treatment straight away, you know, without that ER stop. My conception is as well that a lot of the stabilization centers, as we talk about them, could be a wing off the ED. It could be a wing somewhere else.
Yeah, and just to be clear, the stabilization centers are the state can now create those because of the legislation.
Exactly. So they didn't exist. It was a concept that no one even knew what it was. And I'm going to tell you, when we first started, everyone got a little freaky deaky because it was like, oh, you're going to take people that just, you know, were pulled out of the jaws of death from overdosing, and you're just going to dump them in some place that's not a hospital. And everyone's like, what oh? And that is not what we're doing. And that is never what I would endorse or, you know. So the stabilizations are going to be much more giddied up than we have in the sense of folks that dispense medication and the like. But it's also going to be perhaps a wing off an ED or a wing off another facility so that if someone decompensates or we get hit with something that's different or new, they can slide back over to the ER and we can address that. But, you know, it's for imminently stable folks that, in general, they would overdose on a single substance, be revived at the house, be perfectly fine, and maybe at one point in time saying, I'm not going to the hospital for whatever reason. They hate hospitals. They hate needles. They hate, ironically, they hate needles that don't have anything in them. But they hate the idea of being hospitalized, or they're afraid that they're going to get locked up there and won't get out, or the police will come and haul them away. So the whole idea is to remove that stigma for them sometimes and say, hey, you're perfectly fine, but let's get you help.
So it would be a more comfortable atmosphere.
I think it would be much more conducive to folks to consider it. Sometimes it may be, hey, just come with us and let us hook you up tonight with Suboxone. Let us hook you up tonight, you know, with methadone or whatever is appropriate for the particular place in their disease process. But people, I think, would be much more receptive to say, hey, we're gonna take you to treatment. We're going to get you help tonight. And not go the way of them thinking that the police are going to come in and, you know, they're going to get locked up and tied down and things that are, of course, not true, but that's what people think. You think the worst, right? Like, oh, I'm a heroin addict. Someone's going to lock my butt up and I'm going to get in trouble and this and that. That's not what's going to happen. And I think we're far away from that. So I think it may be more attractive, not only from the standpoint of a lot of them won't have to stay inpatient. A lot of them can just get hooked up in treatment so they don't go through withdrawal, because everybody knows that when you start feeling horrible and you feel like you have flu times 10, what do? You reach for something, right? You don't just sit and feel horrible. If you have the flu, you're like, oh my gosh, where's the NyQuil? Where's the Motrin? Where's the Tylenol, right? But for a drug addict that's feeling sick and horrible because they're in withdrawal, they're not reaching for Motrin, Tylenol, or NyQuil. You know, they'll go back to heroin, which they know makes them feel better when they're drug sick. And that's like the horrible cycle. And that's what we got to break. And so, you know, seeing folks leave the hospital AMA over and over and over again because they get drug sick and it's not addressed just made me crazy. You know, like, hello, these people are leaving because they feel horrible. They feel like they got hit by a truck, plus that had the flu for 5 days before it. And so recognizing if we can get folks into treatment. And part of this is also getting the EDs considering doing medication-assisted treatment. We're not talking about having people stand in line and dispensing it every day, right? We are talking about someone who comes in crisis, they overdoses, they're not interested in going inpatient, but they are interested in not going through withdrawal and trying to stop from picking up again. So one dose, two at the most, until they can get into a stable medication-assisted daily treatment program like Brandywine Counseling has. But if you catch folks on a weekend, like on a Friday night or Saturday, they may not get to be intaked, you know, to get through the process to get Suboxone or methadone that very same day. So we need to offer them something to bridge them till they can get there. So it is my anticipation that in the very near future, we will be bridging folks to outpatient treatment with Suboxone for those that are qualified to do so. And that's another piece also, engaging folks. Right now on Fridays and Saturdays in my ED, I got my best buddy, Keith Pettifor, who is from Brandywine Counseling. He is my sidekick. He sits at my side, and the two of us work together to get folks into treatment. And in the short time that we've had it together, he's been 2 days a week so far, and we will be expanding that. But, you know, he has connected 17 people into treatment, and we follow them 2 weeks, 1 month, 6 weeks, 6 months, 3 months, 6 months. And so we're charting these folks out. We're making callbacks and getting folks to stay in treatment. And that's where we kind of feel like peer-to-peer stuff will come into play is, you know, we have a substance abuse counselor in the ED with me, like I said, Friday and Saturday nights, but we're going to expand that. And then peer-to-peer kind of folks, when I say peer, these are folks that have been there, walk the walk, and are in stable recovery and get it. They get what it's like to deal with this problem. So those are the folks that are going to help continue the engagement process with the folks that we've gotten in treatment. Like I said, we have 17. I have a happy spreadsheet, and you know, we have phone numbers and contacts, and we chart where we are with them. And then, you know, we do it as well if they're inpatient, if they've been hospitalized, we'll go up to the room and do the same thing. So a lot of different things where peers can be actively involved in keeping people engaged and getting them to the next point in their journey, whether it's to show up for MAT or, you know, to show up for follow-up appointments or to stay, you know, in the right place. And then, you know, another piece which really is great is this online resource that's coming. Yes. So that any given time, we can toggle the computer up and see how many beds are available at any given time.
In real time.
In real time, minute by minute. So nobody can play like hide the salami game with us as far as where a bed's available, because unfortunately, beds are tight.
What is bed availability like? I was going to ask you that. I mean, you're working on connecting people with treatment. Are all the resources for treatment there in the state, or do we have work to do on that as well?
I think we can do better, and I think we will do better. We need to do better by these folks. You know, it affects everyone, and I get tired of saying that. It's somebody's brother, it's your uncle, it's somebody. We got to do better by these folks, you know. So I think right now the resources are tight, to say the least, and we don't have room. If every single person that is struggling with substance disorder, even if you were a heroin addict, if every single heroin addict today wanted to go into inpatient treatment, we could not accommodate them. Unfortunately, that's not going to happen, but we anticipate there will be a day that there'll be a slot for everyone who's ready in some form or fashion. It may be transitional housing, sober living. It may be MAT. It may be a shorter rehab stay than traditional. It may be a stabilization center transitioning to MAT, but there will be a way. And the only way you can do this is get all the players at the table and say, this is what we're going to do. This is what we're asking of you. Are you on? Are you coming with me, or do I have to step over you? You know, like, that's where we're at with this. And the Lieutenant Governor is not playing. You know what I mean? Like, she is entrusted with this mission, and she does not fail. And so I just kind of hang on to her cape and go in the direction that we need to go. And I really think the path is becoming more and more clear as we find out what people need and we find out what we don't have and what we need to have. I mean, I'm not here to tell you that this is going to be solved tomorrow. It may not be solved in 6 months, but we're going to stay with it until we do have a tangible path. So when Sandy Gibney overdoses, she doesn't get Narcan and goes home, right? So Sandy Gibney knows exactly where she's going, from point A to back to my life and get my life back. And I feel like if I feel comfortable navigating the system for a loved one, then it'll be okay for everyone else. And I'm not at that point right now.